Welcome to Long Story Long. I'm your host, Lisa Curry. Today's guest is my friend, Dr. Luke McKay. He is a scientist whose research has taken him all over the world to unusual environments to examine microorganisms thriving under extreme conditions. Think deepest parts of the ocean where all that weird shit is. Specifically, he examines DNA to understand the vast diversity of microbial life and its relationship to the chemistry of our planet. Now, if you are confused, so am I. He wrote his intro. I can't even summarize what he does. This is a really fun conversation. We get into all kinds of weird stuff, including life on other planets, which I'm going to say there definitely is, guys. This is such a fun conversation. Luke is a delight. Dr. McKay is a delight. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Here you go. Hey, Luke, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I am so good. Thank you. It's nice to see you again here on my show.
Me.
Yeah, of course. It's funny because I knew a little bit about your work or what you do. And then I just was refreshing on your LinkedIn and I'm like, okay, so what have you not done in science? It feels like you've covered everything. I was like, first of all, what on earth is extreme microbiology? Because is this like the X Games of microbiology?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, you have to like drink Mountain Dew all the time. It's like, yeah.
I assume most science starts with Mountain Dew.
Yeah. It's you know, focusing on microorganisms that live in very extreme environments. So a lot of my research, not my current research, but a lot of my past research and mm-hmm. what I was sort of an expert in is extremophiles, or, you know, working with hydrothermal vents at the bottom of the ocean that reach these incredible temperatures and are super deep and, you know, feeling the pressure of the entire ocean on top of them, or hot springs in Yellowstone National Park, or things that live beneath the seafloor in the ocean. And these, how do microbes sort of cope with those mm-hmm. extreme conditions that we would find to be like totally, you know, they would just kill us immediately.
Is that so we can like later learn to apply those same things to ourselves as the weather on Earth gets more extreme?
Yeah, that's one way you could look at it. And I mean, that's kind of related to what I'm doing now, is sort of applying my understanding of microbiology to the problem of climate change and seeing how we can find microbes to help us out, basically, though they're not extremophiles. So
I love it.
It's a little bit of a shift for me.
Well, thank you. First of all, did you know when you were a kid, where did you grow up?
Alabama.
Did you, growing up, know you wanted to get into science?
No. When I was growing up, I wanted to be Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter.
I think everybody does, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right? That looks like a great time.
It's like, I don't really want to do the science, but I do want to be famous on TV for picking up alligators. Uh-huh. Yeah.
No. Seems like a much easier path.
Yeah. I never really knew. I always loved being outside. I loved mm-hmm. biology. But like being a full-fledged scientist wasn't really on my radar, growing up. It was like, yeah, I didn't know what I wanted to do until I was already in college. I started at community college and was like just taking core requirements and mm-hmm. like, you know, dilly-dallying around.
Just wasting time until you could wrestle alligators.
Exactly. And it has a lot to do, yeah. I don't want to drone on and on, but I was sort of raised in like a fundamentalist Christian home in Alabama.
So I'm going to wager to guess not a ton of science.
Not a ton of science, but like, it's funny. It's like, I can it's so hard to describe because like most of the like intelligence and like analytical technical, or not technical skills, but analytical skills and like, I feel like I got from my family, you know?
Oh, and that's
like,
really cool.
Yeah. So I sort of left behind sort of the doctrine. Mm-hmm. But definitely like I have them to thank for a lot of the way that I process things and think about things even scientifically. So,
That's really cool. So, When did you realize you wanted to go into it seems like, by the way, looking at your LinkedIn, I'm like, this seems like something that you just do one thing and then you're like, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to do one more thing. I'm going to study one more area, because I can't imagine that this was a to-do list, because there's so much. If it was, that's insane.
Yeah, it's weird. Like I knew, so okay, I left behind sort of the Christian faith mm-hmm. that I was raised in, and then had this like incredible desire to sort of fill that void. Like, okay, mm-hmm. where did we come from? Like, why are we here? And so mm-hmm. that was a driving force behind like my career trajectory. Mm-hmm. And so that's what led me to Extremophiles, because, you know, a lot of folks think that life may have originated at hydrothermal vents in the ocean. Oh. So my PhD is actually in marine sciences or oceanography. So it sounds like, oh yeah, I did like oceanography, but really it's like, it was all calculated to this, like, okay, how do I get to the bottom of the ocean to study these incredible life forms that are, you know, thriving under these crazy wild conditions.
All that stuff is so fascinating. I did a single marine biology class, so basically we're on the same level. And it's a mind-blowing how much is out there that we don't even know about, and that presumably, I mean, you could just find something and probably just name it the Luke McKay fish or whatever it is, because there's just so much undiscovered stuff that's left.
Yeah, that'd be a little egotistical, but you could do that. Yeah.
You could, though. I mean, everybody else is naming shit after themselves. There would for sure be a Lisa Curry fish had I continued.
Definitely. And microbes, the world of microbiology. I know that like a lot, as soon as you say microbiology, a lot mm-hmm. of people's eyes gloss over. And like,
they but just what slip you into just a coma.
Said, yeah, they're like, oh God. No, but like what you just said is like just to the nth degree true of mm-hmm. microbiology. We know so little about microbiology. We know a lot, but like in the grand scheme of things, that represents a very tiny fraction of what there is to know. And so, I actually did name an organism, but it wasn't after a person.
Oh.
It was a very long.
It was like somebody's Wi-Fi password.
Yeah.
Like just a series of letters and numbers.
Yeah, exactly. Methanodisulfocoris washburnensis. So
yeah, how dare you? I can't say that.
Right? It's like there's a lot of information packed into that name. Mm-hmm.
Prescription, I guess.
I should give credit where credit's due. That was me and my former advisor, Bill Inskeep. We named that together. So yeah, since it's such a good name, I should give credit.
Yeah. I'm sure generations of kids studying adults at that point studying will love you for that. Long name.
Yeah, they'll probably never come across it. There's so many microbes out there that you're never going to come across them all. So
what are some, I'm just so curious, what are some surprising things? Yeah, I don't know if you can even pinpoint like the most surprising thing like you learned in your studies. Microbiology in marine biology. Micro-marine biology? Micro-machines.
Micro-machines. I have not thought about that in a long time. That's amazing. Good callback. That's
I'm doing
awesome.
Great.
Yeah. Wasn't that the one with the guy that like spoke really fast, like the commercials?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. He was like an auctioneer. But
yes,
selling kids.
Yes.
It was probably a long-winded choking hazard. But they were like, we just have to say it fast so the parents don't hear it.
Yes, exactly. So I think the term you may be looking for is marine microbiology.
There it is. I couldn't remember the order.
I think probably like you mentioned, I mean, the ocean is vast and very uncharacterized, and microbes make it even more that way. And I think, you know, just studying microbes in such a vast environment, all sorts of different places, like they do everything. They, if there's something there, they will figure out how to eat it and then like poop out something different that, you know, is unrelated, or, you know, it's like, it's just like, there's all these different molecules floating around our planet mm-hmm. in all these different places, and microbes can figure out a way to like make life work on those different molecules. And that's a really cool thing to think about when you think about life elsewhere, apart from our planet, like it's somewhere on another planet or in another solar system somewhere.
Yeah, that's, I definitely want to get to that later. I do, maybe this is a weird question, but, you know, as we discover more and more things on Earth that can help, we meaning me and you personally, that can help cure disease or help humans in some way. Is there ever a reluctancy with you or other scientists you know to, I guess, disclose information like that? Because it seems this is a, I don't know if this is going to make total sense, but it seems like anytime we find out like, oh, this might cure cancer, or this might help whatever, the first thing we do is go out and destroy that thing in hopes of saving ourselves. And I know curing cancer is really important, and that's not the exact thing I'm talking about, but is this making sense at all? Like if you found out like shark cartilage, for example, is supposed to be really good to take as a supplement, and meanwhile, like they're overfishing sharks and they're, you know, heading towards extinction, or like certain brands of them. What brand isn't the right word? Species?
Yeah. I like brand. I'm going to try and get that to stick in my scientific circles. Yeah. Excuse me, professor. What brand are you talking about? That's great.
Yeah. I think it might take off. Please give me half credit if it does.
Yeah, definitely. We'll name one brand after you.
Excellent. But do you feel a reluctance, or do you know of anyone that does to share information like that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a case by case situation. I think there's certain things that, like, it's difficult when you have a really good idea in that it's something someone hasn't thought of that mm-hmm. could work. But when you have these like extreme hypotheticals of like something that could work, mm-hmm. you know, as we call them, hypotheses, right? Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, what if there are all these other ramifications that happen, right? And I think mm-hmm. that's possible, like from every idea that you're trying to test, in the bigger the scale of the idea, the bigger the scale of the potential ramifications. So certainly in academic circles, I think scientists are sort of split between like academic circles and industry circles. Mm-hmm. And certainly in academic circles, I think there's a little bit more of that resistance, reluctance to try things. Whereas industry is, of course, more capitalistically driven.
Exactly.
So there's maybe less reluctance, but I think that a lot of companies out there are doing the right thing, and they are figuring out cool ways to address problems that you know, don't have like very big ramifications. So
I mean, it does seem like the AI community, AI community, not meaning the computers themselves, which are in the midst of becoming sentient, apparently, but like people building AI technology. Sometimes I'm like, can we pump the brakes on this? This is a little scary for me. Like those, I can't remember the name of the company that does this
Roomba.
Real scary, Roomba, terrifying. Also, but those dogs, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, the Japanese company, isn't it? That does the dogs, or are you talking about like the MIT lab that
Maybe the MIT one. The ones that like get up and they're shaped like a dog, but then they like dance and they do backflips. And I'm like, these are going to kill us. These are definitely going to kill us. Hello? Like, is anyone sounding the alarm?
Does anyone else watch these movies that we've like grown up on?
It's all coming true. Fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
What made you shift from doing marine microbiology to studying, I guess, things more on land? That's not well put, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. I would say it's still what fell within this sort of extreme realm of like, so I focused on extremophiles because it informs both our understanding of where we came from, like the origin of life on our planet, but also where else life might exist, like on other planets. And those were like the two big reasons I was interested in extremophiles. And so I went from studying extremophiles in the ocean to studying extremophiles in Yellowstone National Park in like hot spring environments. So that was kind of the transition, even though my PhD, like I said, was in marine sciences. So it, you know, coming to Montana,
hot springs, there's water there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all the same.
So extremes. That's why. Yeah.
What are there a lot of similarities between the two environments or between, I guess, different extremophiles?
Yes and no. I mean, there's so many of them that sometimes there are and sometimes there aren't. I mean, this is the hardest thing to convey in microbiology is the vastness of it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I keep harping on that, but that's just like, there's so much of it. You know, like your human body has like 30 trillion human cells, like your skin cells, your eye cells, your liver cells, like something like 30 trillion cells, and it has like 40 trillion microbial cells. Like you're crazy. Mostly made up of microbiology, your body, which is like wild, right? And so
it is, it's wild that it all just kind of sticks together and moves along. I was just reading a book.
How does it do that?
I don't know. And I was just reading about like heart transplants and stuff. And I'm like, as I'm reading it, I'm like, what if my heart, how does my heart just know to keep going? There's not, it's not battery power. What the fuck? It's just,
I have that same thought all the time. Like you just wait, you're like just sitting around and then the thought creeps into your head. Like, what if my heart just stops right now?
Like, yeah, what if it's like, I'm done.
Nah,
I've had enough of this
shit. I'm gonna take a break.
Especially when you think of people living to like 90, 100. I'm like, oh, for 100 years, that organ was just like, I mean, I guess I'll do it another day.
Just chugging right along. I mean,
it doesn't seem right. It's something, something's up with it. I don't trust it.
Yeah. Same.
What was I going to ask you? Oh, I saw you've worked in oil spill microbiology as well. Is this, now this is really timely because today the Supreme Court ruled that the EPA can't, they can't regulate greenhouse gases or they can't as much, they don't have the authority to regulate greenhouse gases, which is cool because like, you know, I was ready to move to another planet anyway. So I was like, good, perfect timing. I'm packed.
Yeah,
I'm ready to go.
Like we're headed there. Yeah.
I'm going to have to ask you about living on the ocean floor in some kind of bubble.
There are people who do that.
I've been to an underwater hotel, weirdly, in Key Largo as part of my marine biology class.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was very weird, but cool. And also the whole time I was like, now, why would they fucking put this here? Leave the ocean.
That sounds like
alone.
A pretty cool marine biology class.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, it was like a week of, you know, field study or whatever. And then you know what? Honest to God, I really wanted to go into that field. But then I thought, I don't want to feel helpless. I don't want to feel that helpless and out of control. Like as, you know, like I'm studying something next to an oil spill and I'm just like, well, I guess I'm doing nothing. Not that you're doing nothing, but it just feels like as hard as so many people work to keep the planet clean and to right wrongs, bigger, much bigger, more powerful entities and companies are working harder than us to just have a free-for-all.
Yeah.
I was reading something about, and I, listen, I have no memory for I can't retain information very well. Maybe a second reason I didn't go into microbiology or marine biology. I was reading something about like, oh yeah, you know, over time an oil spill just kind of like the ocean kind of corrects itself. And I don't know if I believe that. I mean, do you think it's totally hopeless? Because we still have oil rigs and there's going to be another spill because there always is going,
there probably is possible one right now that we don't know about.
Yeah, exactly. There's probably at least one that we don't know about.
Yeah.
I mean, like realistically, how long would it take for the surrounding, and that feels silly too. I was going to say for like the surrounding water to kind of like correct and like for things to grow back and for, but it feels like that just kind of goes on and on because obviously the water doesn't stay in one area and mm-hmm. you know, anything.
You must have learned that marine biology.
Yeah. And anyway, yeah. I have a super big brain. but you know, like if fish are poisoned, their offspring is also going to be fucked up and poisoned. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Is there any hope? I guess such a heavy question.
Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, the ocean's real big. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, there are people that are proponents of this idea of like dilution is the solution to pollution, which I think is not the solution.
That sounds terrible because you keep diluting stuff and sooner or later.
And also like some things can be toxic at very low concentrations, mm-hmm. you know, and so even when they're diluted. But I think the issue with the Deepwater Horizon spill, we learned a lot from that mm-hmm. because it was so terrible. And there were just a lot of different components of it and different researchers doing different things. And like mm-hmm. one of the biggest things we learned is that the oil didn't all go to one place. Like a lot of times you think of an oil spill in the ocean is like oil is lighter than water and it floats to the surface and you have this like mm-hmm. nasty crude oil slick floating on the surface that kind of just gets mm-hmm. dispersed, or you can like use these booms and you can clean it up a little bit and some of it washes on shore. Well, the Deepwater Horizon, a lot of the oil was actually like suspended in the subsurface, you know, thousands of meters down, like floating around as this, what they call the subsurface plume, that they were like trying to track it with these like underwater tracking devices. And then also some of the oil ended up on the seafloor. And these are like vastly, very, very, very different habitats. Mm-hmm. Like the surface ocean has different organisms in it than the deep ocean, which has different organisms in it than the seafloor. And so like all of these different habitats were impacted. And as I mentioned before, you know, microbes will eat anything. So there certainly were a lot of microbes involved in this process, which is how.
Oh, and it's healthy for them probably, right? Just crude oil.
I mean, like they'll figure out how to make energy and, you know, use the carbon, mm-hmm. you know. That, you know, one very adverse effect is like oftentimes when a microbe consumes oil, in order to consume the oil, it consumes oxygen, which means that it takes all the oxygen out of the water, and then there's no oxygen for the fish or the other, you know, higher animals in the water. And so there's like oxygen depletion zones and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so, I think in summary, it is like an incredibly complex situation that is bad. Like hands down, it's a bad thing to spill oil in the ocean. And even with all that research, like we learned a lot, but there's still so much to know. I know I keep saying that, like I'm going to sound
anything, I love it.
But
yeah.
Like, pretty much. Yeah. I'm like obsessed with unknown, the unknown in general. So, that's why like every time, every topic I'm talking about, I'm like, man, there's so much we don't know.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it fun, to be honest.
I mean, I think that applies to so many things, although you know, people's tendencies are to think that they've, you know, learned everything in a certain area.
Yeah.
But does it frustrate you at all that, like, there's so much unknown and it's not possible in your lifetime to know it all? It's not like a goal you can attain of, like, well, you know, I'm just going to study every day and then in 100 years I'll have learned it all.
It frustrates me a lot, actually. Like, I'm a self-described futurist. Uh-huh. I mean, as dismal as the outlook of the future can be in some ways, you know, with climate change and everything, like, I am so curious about the future, like 200, 500 years from now. I just want to know. I just, like, really, really want to know what it's like 1,000 years, 2,000, you know. And I just, it sucks because I'm not gonna.
It seems like it might be worse. I mean, based on everything we're seeing, hate to spoil it for you. I feel the same way though, that I'm like, well, I do want to know what it looks like. And I want to live till I'm 150 because I want to see what things are going to be like.
Yeah.
You know,
I think
then.
I think that I talk about this with my wife a lot, actually. Like, we talk about the future and climate change. She used to be a climate change educator, and she would go travel around to different high schools in North Carolina. Back when I was in grad school, we lived in North Carolina. Uh-huh. And she would give this, it was called the Alliance for Climate Education at the time, but she would give this assembly at different high schools about climate change. And it was really cool. So anyways, we talk about this a lot, but, we were involved in a climate justice summit in North Carolina. And I think I learned a lot from that. And I think in terms of the future and the dismal future, we're all kind of in trouble. But sadly, there is going to be some major, there's a serious climate justice issue where certain people are in way more trouble than other people. And I think that's truly the really despicable part of the people who are denying climate change and or proactively trying to, you know, change policies such that we can't do anything about climate change, because they're just so short-sighted and they're so selfish and they just don't understand that this is affecting different people and different, it's affecting us all. It's affecting some people much more severely.
Well, it's already starting to destabilize countries. So it's if you're hit with a hurricane that bigger than, if your island nation is hit with a hurricane bigger than anything it's ever seen before.
Yeah.
You know, how do you can't continue recovering from bigger and bigger natural disasters. Yeah. It's just, it's not possible.
That's right.
It's, I only recently learned, by the way, that, I guess the big oil companies and I'm sure other corporations as well were the ones that did the campaigns for did all the recycle, reuse, renew, recycle campaigns that taught us that it's about personal responsibility. And it's not that, I mean, I do as much as I can. I try to do my part, but I'm those bastards told us it was our fault. It's course.
Hey, by the way, I don't know how, do you have these things from your childhood that you remember from school and you're wait, was that just at my school or was that something everyone had? My question for you is, when I was in elementary school, we had, speaking of assemblies, we had these assemblies by someone named Auntie Litter. And it was this woman that wore green and white tights and a blue jean dress or whatever, and would tell us to reuse, reduce waste, and recycle. Did you ever meet Auntie Litter, or is that a highly specific thing of my upbringing?
I don't think she got booked at my school, but gotcha, I'm sure we had other things. I remember when I was a kid, I was I'm gonna start I was so adamant that I was going to start a club with my friends and we were going to stop pollution. And then, you know, the more I learned, the more I was I don't think we are. I think we're just fucked.
That seems a little bit too big of a problem. Let's focus on something a little more manageable.
It's crazy. And I kind of back to the outer space conversation. I want to talk to you about aliens or life outside of beyond Earth, I guess. But I also was reading this New Yorker article about how Elon Musk just keeps shooting shit up into space. And now there's all this space trash. And now there's companies scrambling to try to build a mechanism to collect space trash because it's so dangerous when it's up there. And I'm just like, are you serious? You couldn't, space too? Really? Leave it alone.
Yeah, no. So now we're stuck. Yeah.
I'm hoping aliens come and take us to another location.
there's a former astronaut, and I don't remember his name, but he has this like famous theory about space trash and like basically this sort of like domino effect of like one satellite hitting another satellite and shattering at a certain orbit level into a bunch of fragments that then hit all the other satellites and so on and so on and so forth. And then like forming this cloud of trash around the Earth, which is a very, really scary thought.
Yeah, that sounds terrifying.
But yeah, I think that like, he like came up with that theory like a long time ago. And yeah, I'll just, plug, there's a great book that's sort of similar to this called Seven Eves. It's a sci-fi book by Neal Stephenson. I won't tell you what happens, but it is related to this, although it's not technically trash related.
Oh.
But it's interesting to see how the Earth, it's basically how would the Earth deal with such a situation.
Also interesting to me that just the concept of everything that's all the trash that's on Earth came from things that were made on Earth. And yet there's just so much of it. It's everywhere.
Yeah,
it's a lot of trash. Now we're filled with microplastics. And I'm like, it feels like we've somehow created more matter. Which doesn't make sense, feels like it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It's also so, as alarming as it is, it's also sort of wildly fascinating that you like look at nature, like a waterfall and some beautiful trees, and then you look at like a plastic water bottle and you're like, how did we turn that into this? You know, like how did that beautiful thing become this nasty piece of trash in the gutter on the side of the road?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's just like that. I think that's really interesting. But yeah, there's a lot of trash.
Some would say
all
too
over
much.
The place. Some
people,
might.
Yeah. How has it been working at Yellowstone and working in or studying things and studying hot springs? Is that, I mean, I imagine it just like lights up your brain in a different spot than doing like deep ocean things.
Definitely. Field research is very different, you know, like actually collecting the samples in the ocean. You know, we would use like a submarine, a submersible, and go down these crazy depths and collect samples. And then in Yellowstone, we like would backpack, you know, several miles to these hot springs. And which, by the way, I have to say this, do not try and sample a hot spring in Yellowstone National Park. You will die. And it is a terrible idea.
Oh.
and a lot of people have died in hot springs. And if I don't say things like this, then the permits that I have worked on, which I'm no longer involved in, but other people are, could be revoked. And we are permitted and trained researchers to do this kind of stuff.
Wait, so people are just trying to grab samples?
Well, I mean, there's like very strict rules about what we can show from our research. Like I can't show you pictures of like us taking samples because there are so many people in Yellowstone National Park who try and do the dumbest things ever. Like take selfies with bison. I mean, like every single year there are people gored by bison that just don't follow the rules or like, you know, read the signs or listen to what they warn you about. And the same thing happens. Like people have fallen in hot springs and died. And so like,
it
they're really, really
fair,
careful.
Though, right?
Yeah, it's like, well, what did you think was going to happen? A lot of people do like search for backcountry hot springs to get in. And the hot springs that I work at or was working at before my current job, you know, those are the hot springs that will kill you if you get in them. They're not for soaking. They're not like nice, rejuvenating hot springs. These are hot springs that only the microbes can survive in and humans will die. So I just want to like make that disclaimer extremely clear.
I only recently went to, I wasn't like, I thought of a hot spring as like, you know, this boiling hot geyser, I guess. I didn't think of it like the, being part of a spa. And I went to one for the first time recently and I was like, oh, you just built a pool around natural water? What the fuck? What is this? It was so strange. I was like, who let you do this? Leave it alone. I mean, it was pleasant, but it was also
definitely a lot of
really bizarre.
Yeah, definitely.
What are some of the, can you say any of the like crazier things you've seen out there or learned, I guess, collecting things in the field?
Yeah. So let's see, like, you know, I've seen grizzly bears.
and that's going to be terrifying. Even, even with a whole crew of people, I'd be like, you know what? I think we're done for the day.
Actually, that the time that we saw a grizzly bear, we were actually driving, me and another researcher, Margot Mele, were driving to the trailhead to like go on this 4.5-5 mile hike to this hot spring. And we saw a grizzly bear like half a mile from the trailhead and we just like driving. And then we drove past it and had to like get our gear out and then start hiking into the woods. Like,
no.
Really like, oh God. But yeah, you know,
you just drive past and you don't make eye contact. You're like, yeah, we don't know you.
Yeah.
Don't worry. We're not going to hurt you.
Yeah. Don't pay attention to us. Yeah, exactly.
So no selfies.
No selfies.
Disappointing. No. Yeah. Disappointing.
Yeah. But we carry bear spray and like,
wait, that's a real thing that works.
Yeah. That works, you know, 50% of the time.
That's plenty.
You do hear a lot of like a lot of the times when people do get mauled by grizzlies, it's always like one of the things that they list is whether or not they like used bear spray. And often, you know, there have been several where, yes, they sprayed the bear. But it seems to be the most effective technique that there is. You know, so although if you want to deep dive into the blogs of why guns versus bear spray or better, you know, that certainly exists on the internet. But I usually stick with bear spray.
Before we were recording, I was saying I had started watching your TED Talk. I had only started it because I only discovered it right before we started recording. And I am absolutely going to go back and watch it. But you discuss aliens in there. And I am dying to hear your thoughts because I have a whole chunk about aliens in my stand-up, and I used to think it was a load of horseshit when I was growing up, and now I'm like, oh, there's no way there's not life. Like, statistically, it's impossible that there's not life out there.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people feel that way. That's how I felt growing up. It was like such a wild, like, no way thought, and now I'm like, oh, duh.
Yeah, it seems like just like wacko people. I have to say, this is going to sound like I'm full of shit, but I promise you, cross my heart, I promise on everything. When I was in high school in my Algebra 2 class, my teacher, Mr. Johnson, when we were learning about imaginary numbers, he put the formula for imaginary numbers up on the board. And then he dramatically turned to us and he said, you know, this is the formula for imaginary numbers, and we were like, great, and we're writing it down, and he's like, and it's also the formula that aliens use to take me into the fourth dimension, and we were like, what the fuck? And I started laughing and he screamed at me. It was a whole thing, but he like went on. We spent the rest of class with him telling us, Yes way. So now you know what the formula is. so you're welcome. But no, he like way. Spent the rest of class telling us that there's a portal behind his dresser and he's been abducted multiple times and he thinks his son was abducted. And then he showed us all these books and he goes, like, I looked him up years ago and he is associated, if you look him up online, he does still go to all these big conventions. And I was like, I do still think that that was a silly way to lead a classroom. But I'm like, fuck, I wish I would have been in my headspace now, because I for sure would have been like, I have 1,000 questions. We are not talking about math anymore. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, to be honest, that's like, I think that is part of why there was such a resistance to the idea of alien life for so long, is because there were a lot of, I mean, I don't want to be like too mean about the teacher.
Listen, but he's not my friend.
There's some crazy people out there that, like, you know, claim some pretty wild things that are almost for certain not true. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't
almost
notice I say almost for certain. That's just me being a scientist. Uh-huh. I say that pretty much about everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's hard, because when you start talking about the realistic possibility of aliens, it's like you want to be like, but I'm not like those people. Like,
yeah,
I'm talking about it like for real. And yeah, so there certainly is a lot of like scientific validity. I mean, space is massive. There's a lot of possibilities for life, which is how my TEDx talk ends. So you will see that as you continue to watch it. But
I love it.
Yeah, so it's just like, it really goes to show that, like, if you start thinking, you know, counting like how many galaxies there are in the universe and how many stars are in each galaxy and how many planets are probably revolving around those stars, mm-hmm. that are just like our sun with little other solar systems all over the place, like, and how many of those planets are in the habitable zone,
yeah.
then you get a pretty large number where there could be life. So yeah, I think like, it's very likely. And then tying that back into like all of the possibilities for how life actually lives on Earth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we live by breathing oxygen and eating food and like putting those molecules together to like get carbon and energy, right? And microbes can use a lot of it. They can breathe all these other things that aren't oxygen, mm-hmm. and they can, like, you know, use other sources of carbon and sources of energy. And you start to realize, like, there's so many options for how life works, just life as we know it.
Yeah.
You know, just
it's like
that.
Not necessarily oxygen and carbon dioxide out.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. You know, like methanogens, you know, are carbon dioxide and hydrogen in, or some of them, carbon dioxide and hydrogen in and methane gas out. And so, like, you know, that would be like an example of a microbe that just does a completely different metabolism in order to stay alive on this planet. And there's tons of examples of that.
Well, and so, I think we could argue that people living in more polluted areas aren't breathing oxygen at all. I don't know. When I go on vacation, I breathe oxygen. I can't tell you that I'm doing that in Los Angeles. My body is just breaking down smog.
Yeah.
Keeping me alive somehow.
There's oxygen in there somewhere. It's just, there's a lot of other crap.
There's a couple of particles.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of climate change, I mean, in the late summer here in Montana, we're breathing a lot of smoke from fires.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's pretty awful. But yeah, it's, I feel you. It's not the smog. It's not the same. You know, it's kind of nice and fresh until it's late summer. And then it's like, oh God.
Do you think, I mean, I know it... It feels that we're really not doing much to curb climate change. I feel like every week I hear, guys, we've got a couple months left. We've got a few days. We got to change this in the next 5 hours or we're fucked.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't.
That's so true.
And no one's listening. Like, no one who is driving the fucking vehicle is listening.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I guess what are your thoughts on that? Like, what do what can anyone as an individual do? Because I recycle, but then I'm told like, oh, if you throw one thing in the recycling bag that's not recyclable, they throw the whole thing out. And I'm like, well, I'm not a fucking recyclologist. I don't know.
You're not?
Yeah. I'm like, if it's plastic, I throw it in there. I don't know. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah. No, my take is like, I'm glad you asked that question. My take on this is sort of like policy is good. We need mm-hmm. to work on getting policies in place that like help citizens at large, make a dent in this problem. Mm-hmm. However, there is clearly a problem with politics and the slowness of it, or the retroactive motions of politics mm-hmm. in this country and elsewhere. And I personally do not think we can rely on policy to solve the problem for exactly the reason that you said. We're out of time. And so that has a lot to do with, shameless plug to the company I work for now. It's called LanzaTech. LanzaTech. And there are other companies like LanzaTech, but LanzaTech really is like the front runner in this space of like trying to come up with a capitalistic solution that operates in that industrial space mm-hmm. of curbing carbon emissions and getting these, carbon neutral or carbon negative products to the market and competing those with other products, whether they're fuels or clothing or, perfumes or like all these mm-hmm. different things that you can make. And so that's the gist, and I should mention I'm here on behalf of myself, not on behalf of the company. but it's a really cool company, and there are other companies doing that, and that's why I transitioned from academia to industry, is because I wanted to do something. I said like, okay, I've got this scientific expertise, I know a lot about microbes and what they can do, and mm-hmm. I'm really excited to like apply that understanding to this problem. We got to do something, and we got to do it now. And so that's what caused that sort of shift in my career that just happened last year.
It feels daunting, and I've gone back and forth in my life between like feeling like panicked, like everything I do, if I don't, if I use a plastic straw, that's it. I'm ruining the earth single-handedly. Between that and thinking like, well, I need to have some peace. I did, Luke, years ago, I went to a wedding in Mexico and the hotel I stayed at did not recycle. And so I put all of my things in my boyfriend's luggage and I stuffed my luggage with recycling, stuffed it full. And would you believe that I got the random TSA check in Mexico? And they were like, what the fuck is this? And they were like, what are you doing? Like, it's
that
not
is so admirable. I don't know. I know a lot of like very progressive people that care a lot about the environment. I'm not sure I know many people that would like pack the recycling used garbage to recycle and bring it back on the plane. So very impressed.
There was a long time where I just had no peace in my life because I was scrambling to, I guess, try to curb climate change on my own. And now I'm like, okay, well, my teeth are really sensitive. So if I need to use a straw to drink a glass of ice water, I'm just, what am I doing to myself? To an extent. I think one thing also, when you were talking about carbon neutral thing, it made me think of how this feels asinine to me. And hopefully you are going to tell me that actually it's good and it works somehow. But the idea that companies can, quote, offset their carbon footprint by simply paying a fee for their carbon output, I'm like, that doesn't make sense to me, because the earth isn't a cashier accepting money in exchange for pollution. And it's like, of course the wealthiest companies don't give two fucks. They're going to be like, okay, great, we're going to keep polluting at the same level, and then we'll give you 20 grand or whatever. What does it matter? Is it as asinine as it seems?
You know, to be perfectly honest with you, I do not know a lot about that. And it's something I've always been curious. I have the same exact question that you have. And
I would keep like meaning to see, look like, up where research. That money goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to see that research if it's just like, you know, yeah, we plant a tree for every like billion, you know, tons of carbon that you, you
for
know,
for every 4 million trees you cut
sky.
Down, we will plant one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I don't know. I'm not an expert on that. I just don't know. I'm very curious as well. So I think that there's something there. I think that like, it's better than nothing. And I think offsets are like an important like market to look into and to try and pursue. But, you know, without knowing much more about it, like it's hard. It does bubble up some skepticism, you know, for me. But yeah, to be honest.
It is something I keep because I do a lot of like going on government websites and see where just to try to see where our money is going because I like to remain angry. I keep meaning to look that up. Like I looked into Space Force because when we signed the contract to fund Space Force, I was so angry. And I'm like, we gave $3 trillion to Northrop Grumman for Space Force. And we're training 15,000 troops for Space Force. And my argument is like you and I are on the same page that that there's for sure life out there. But I think if they can manage to come to Earth, that means they're so far more advanced than us, then we're going to fight them?
We're screwed.
No. Yeah, they're going to turn us to
like,
fucking
here you
dust.
Go. Here's our plan. Yeah. You probably don't want it because we ruined it.
Yeah, we've destroyed it. But it's like historically when two civilizations meet and one of them is far more advanced than the other one, the one that's less advanced doesn't survive. So like, Maze, open your door, leave milk and cookies out. Like, it's over if they come.
Yeah. we're done. Another plug for a science fiction book is The Three-Body Problem. And the second of that trilogy is called The Dark Forest. And it talks about exactly what you're talking about. It's like the, what do they call it? It's like cosmic philosophy or cosmic sociology. And it's the idea of like of a more powerful alien civilization and a less powerful one. And that the universe is actually like a dark forest and there's predators and there's prey and you basically just don't want to be detected. And so you should just kind of like hide.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
I'll start digging a hole in my backyard right now.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so that's just a little, as you can tell, probably I do love sci-fi. I think it's super fun to think about because I am a futurist. What is going to happen? But yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's really fascinating to think of. Although, you know, I wish that money would have been allocated to something else.
Yeah.
Something that makes more sense.
Yeah.
And I do. I mean, I don't know. I hate to be like, oh, I have a bit about this. But it's just the fact that all of a sudden things aren't UFOs anymore. They're UAPs. I'm like, guys, come on. Just say it's scary shit flying around. It's not.
Yeah.
We can't make it fancy. We're screwed. Just say we're screwed. We already know we're screwed, but just say it outright and we'll be fine. Let us rest.
Yeah. What are we going to do? Like, it's not like we can do anything. Like, just tell us what it is. Like,
yeah, something lands on Earth. Yeah. I'm going to be like, you can park in my yard if you need to. Like,
yeah,
whatever you want. That's going to be my my thing is just killing them with kindness because I'm not going to be able to kill them in any other manner.
Yeah, want to hear a joke?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, free tickets to my show. I'll have them on the podcast. It'll be a great time. Before we wrap up, is there any takeaway you want to leave people with? You know, I guess I wish everyone listening would try to curb their garbage use.
Yeah. I guess call your congresspeople.
Yes. Call them, harass them, drag them out of their home.
Yes. Get some people to do some things because we do need to fix these problems. But I think on a larger scale, one thing I like to say often is that you can look this up on the CERN Particle Accelerator website, but you know, everything that we know about the universe, like the known amount of matter and all the things that we understand in this podcast and like the pictures we're looking at and the trees and the microbes and the plastic, is 5%. It makes up 5% of the known matter in our universe.
That's insane. Not,
like what we know about matter makes up 5%. And so like everything that we understand is based on 5% of what's around us, except for the people that are really smart and they study the other like 95% or whatever fraction of that is dark matter and stuff. You know, they may know a little bit more. But I always think that's super interesting to be like, you know, just in this grand scheme of things, like, what do we actually know? And so with that, I would just say, like, you know, it's okay not to know the answer. But when you do know the answer, you should really try and convince your Congress people that they should do something about it.
I imagine anyone that knows, the people who know the most, whatever scientists out there that know the most, have probably fucked off to another realm by now. They're just, they've zapped themselves out of here. They're like, what? Let them figure it out. They're not even here.
Yeah.
They're not even time traveling. They've just completely gone to another
Well, we don't know because we don't know what it even is.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly wouldn't leave a trail behind. I'd be like, take all my things with me. Turn them to dust.
Yeah.
I do have one last question for you that I like to ask everyone. If your childhood self, like 10-year-old Luke, could meet you as an adult, what do you think he would think?
He would just be like,
he'd be like, first of all, how did I time travel?
How did I time travel? And like, he's like, he would be very, very obsessed with the fact that I don't believe in God. That would be a big thing for him because he really believed in God in a big way. And so that would be like a fundamental rift for him to get over, and was a fundamental rift for me to get over. So 10-year-old Luke, he would have thought it was really cool though, what I was doing and all the adventures I've gotten to go on with science, you know, to the bottom of the ocean or deep water horizon, Antarctica, those things. He would have been
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
What's your favorite place that you've been? And so now I'm asking you more questions. I was like, one last question and then 10 more questions. I also read this other article about this explorer that went across Antarctica and then he died afterwards. And I'm forgetting his name right now. But it was really fascinating. And that seems like a fucking crazy place. Like, would that be one of your top places you've traveled to?
Definitely one of the top. Yep. I mean, it's hard to take. Yeah. How many spots do I get for my tops? Because, I would say
as many as you want.
I mean, going in a submarine to the bottom of the ocean, like a mile and a quarter deep, and seeing a hydrothermal vent is probably the top. Like, that's just crazy.
Well, and almost nobody gets to see that.
Yeah. And it just was really just wild and awesome to see that. And then, Antarctica, super cool. I was at Palmer Station, which the U.S. has three different stations, McMurdo, South Pole, and Palmer. Mm-hmm. And Palmer is like a really, really tiny station, like on the coast. There's only like, 20 to 40 people there, even fewer if it's the winter. So like it's a really tight-knit like family community when you're there. It's like really cool and special, and I got to like do science for 4 months there. It was really fun. But I got to hold penguins.
What?
I got to like help out.
I'm gonna go there right now.
The bird. Not everyone gets to do that. I got to do that because it's helping the bird researchers, and they were like, here, weigh this penguin. And I was like, cool. So that was a really cool one too. And then, Deepwater Horizon was really cool. It was the first research cruise to Deepwater Horizon, like 2 weeks or a week after the spill. So at the explosion.
Incredible. Yeah. I assume you were purely research then on that project and not
not on like a Disney cruise. Yeah.
Yeah. You weren't there cleaning the ducks off with the Dawn dish soap as we've been told scientists do in the commercials.
No. I was helping to take the first samples to be analyzed for the chemistry and microbiology of both the surface oil slick and the sediment, like the seafloor deposit.
Incredible.
Oil. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I will, if I don't stop myself, I'll keep asking you questions for the next hour and a half, 2 hours. But I want to let you get back to your life. Thank you so much for all of that. That was super fun. And I only felt like half an idiot.
Well, thank you for having me and being such a funny person and sharing your humor with the world. It certainly makes the world a better place. So you're doing that right.
I'm doing what I, you know what? And it creates no carbon footprint. We'll talk.
That's right.
I think the flying around part, I haven't figured out how to offset.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
All right. Thanks so much. Talk to you later.
All right. See ya.
Thanks so much for listening. Once again, that was Dr. Luke McKay. You can find him on Instagram at Luke with 7 U's. Very spooky. And I am Lisa Curry. You can find me on Instagram at Olympian Lisa Curry. And please do follow me there. I post lots of fun stuff, including show updates. Speaking of show updates, next weekend, August 5th and 6th, I am opening for Jim Jefferies in Hawaii. You guys, I am so excited. I haven't been to Hawaii since 2008, and I've never performed there. Friday the 5th, we are in Maui. Saturday the 6th, we are in Honolulu. So get your tickets now. You're not doing shit else at night in Hawaii. What are you going to night swim? Hell no, that's too scary. Other than that, if you're enjoying the show, please like, subscribe, leave a nice comment, write your congressperson. We will see you back here next Thursday. Bye.